Mr. Ruffin?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Thomas Ruffin, and though I'm a member of the bar, I'm here representing myself today. I think I can briefly summarize the issues. Number one, the question is whether my amended complaint adequately lays out sufficient facts to plausibly lay out a basis of liability against Officer McConaughey in the District of Columbia, but in this case, Officer McConaughey for a Section 1983 violation. And then two, whether the matters attached to the motion to dismiss, and then also my declaration attached to my opposition to that motion, transform the motion to dismiss under Rule 12D into a motion for summary judgment. And in light of that, whether the admissions, as recorded in my declaration and in Officer McConaughey's police report, preclude a judgment by summary judgment as a matter of law.
Now, what is the evidence that Judge Walton considered anything? I know there's the footnote that says I've considered the memorandum and these things were attached to the memorandum, but because his order so clearly is focused on the complaint, what is your evidence that he considered anything outside the pleadings, even though they were attached to something that he did say he considered?
Judge Henderson, I mean, I have to be frank with you. I'm simply relying on Judge Walton's words. And put in the context of the litigation, this is how it's framed. First of all, when the government filed and Officer McConaughey filed their motion to dismiss and then the alternative for summary judgment, I think Judge Walton isolated the two and overlooked Rule 12D. And then second of all, what he said when I made the mistake of kind of confusing the rules with jurisdiction because I practice in Maryland, D.C., Superior Court, and Federal Court, I didn't attach the statement of material facts, and I was rushing. And this was my case. That was one thing. I was so into it, I couldn't detach from myself from be as professional as I would and double-check the rules. So I didn't attach a statement of material facts. And Judge Walton made clear before he decided the motion that in looking at the motion for summary judgment, he would consider the statement filed by Officer McConaughey in the District of Columbia, their statement of material facts, and excluded my statement filed late of material facts and cite the local rules showing that I didn't comply with the technicality. But in doing that, he, as stated in the footnote, this is why I say the context is important, he said that he certainly would consider my declaration under penalty of perjury because he had to weigh whether the motion for summary judgment laid out disputed material facts. And then the second, all I'm saying is, in that context, that footnote in the first order and the footnote in the decision are what I rely on. And I can only base that in that context that he still ruled in that fashion. He never excluded it. I actually think that the district court overlooked 12D. As I keep looking at the matter, I think that in looking at the motion to dismiss and the motion for summary judgment, he initially was looking at the motion for summary judgment, recognizing that that was there and the whole case could be resolved. But then for whatever reasons, which I don't know, he focused on the motion to dismiss, and by overlooking Rule 12D, he didn't transform that motion to summary judgment and recognize that either way it was in that fashion unless he excluded the matters outside the pleadings.
Let's just say that he didn't consider anything outside the pleadings.
Help me understand how he wouldn't.
Well, let's just say.
Hypothetically. Yes, okay. Yes, ma'am.
Have you read Iqbal, the Supreme Court decision?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, tell us how your pleading is different from what the Supreme Court found was deficient in Iqbal.
Okay. Iqbal, Ashcroft versus Iqbal reminds me of Natar versus Bush in this fashion. My allegations in my complaint, they're brief. It's an 8-page complaint. But when you look at counts 1, 2, and 3, there are substantial factual allegations. They just hit to the point and move on. With Iqbal, the problem is not that Iqbal did not state a cause of action that stayed in court. The problem was that he made allegations that of wrongdoing that he attributed to the Attorney General and to the Director of the FBI. And here they're in offices in D.C., and certainly they're either establishing policy for how these matters were pre-prosecuted or they're overseeing them. But the torture and other forms of misconduct that Mr. Iqbal suffered at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn did not mean that the Attorney General and the FBI Director here in D.C. were actually ordering these lower-level government employees, both federal and local government employees, to perpetrate that sort of misconduct, or even to segregate Mr. Iqbal from other prisoners solely because of his Muslim religion, or because while he was Pakistani, he may have appeared to be Arab. And so that's what the decision in Iqbal was saying. While Iqbal made out a cause of action against many government officials and employees, he did not say enough in his factual allegations such that there could be a plausible, not possible, but plausible inference of liability that could be imposed upon the Attorney General Ashcroft, and Director Mueller. It was just called for some speculation that despite their otherwise neutral policy, which would have been harsh, which was certainly for Mr. Iqbal troubling, it did not say explicitly or even imply racist bigotry, ethnic bigotry, or national origin bigotry. And so in my case, here we have a complaint where I explicitly identify the officer. I state the nature of the arrest and that I was detained overnight in the District of Columbia in different facilities. And that I say quite clearly that I was charged, subject to criminal and civil proceedings, and arrested and detained. Why? For false allegations of reckless driving, driving with a face permit, which is not even an offense, driving without a seatbelt being on, all false allegations. And on the basis of those false allegations, I suffered this hardship. And so what, and in that, what those facts, I'm making clear two things. If indeed those allegations of reckless driving, operating without a seatbelt, and driving with a defaced permit are just false, and the one thing for which I could have been arrested was reckless driving, if that's a false allegation, there's no probable cause, and then with regard to the statute in section 23-581, there's no legitimate basis for the arrest to be made, even if I had been recklessly driving. So, hence, that ties in the Ninth Amendment protection.
Your declaration that, according to my hypothetical, we're not considering, and Walton did not consider.
Right. I forgot
that,
Judge.
According to that, you said you were sitting parked listening to music.
No, I didn't say that. No. Officer McConnell said that. I said I was sitting in the parked car in front of 607 Galveston Place Southeast. I was listening to the returns from the Wisconsin primaries between Obama and Hillary Clinton. Exactly, I was parked.
Right. So that is an example of a fact that if you had put it in your complaint, would have supported your allegation that it was a false stop or false arrest.
I see your point, Judge Henderson, and pardon me for missing that. Since I have very little time, let me hit to that point very quickly. Officer McConney and the District of Columbia both made a point alike along those lines. And what they insisted was that I was supposed to describe my conduct as I drove down 4th Street. I was supposed to describe what happened before then. But I didn't file a lawsuit on the basis of how I drove down 4th Street. I filed a lawsuit based upon the arrest and the detention of my person and the intrusion upon me personally. So certainly I could have provided an extensive autobiographical statement or a memoir about this, and it could have been 30 pages long. And that would have been a very broad, comprehensive admission that would have precluded the District of Columbia and Officer McConney from having to do a lot of discovery. I simply laid out plain statement of facts that showed that I was arrested in a fashion that violated my constitutional rights.
The problem, that's the way. Up until Iqbal, that's the way we all thought you could do it.
But Judge Tatel, keep in mind, yeah. Iqbal has a two-prong analysis.
I was just saying, Iqbal, pre-Iqbal, your complaint would have been just fine.
It would have been fine, but yeah. I'm saying post-Iqbal.
No question.
And post-Natar, it's excellent. Yeah. It's adequate. And this is why I say, if we have the two-pronged analysis, we separate out the conclusions, the statement of the law, and we have that factual analysis that's talking about my arrest, not talking about whether I said, whether I greeted anybody before I started driving, whether I drove down 4th Street or South Capitol Street, but simply about the nature of the arrest. And if I'm falsely accused of an arrest, of allegations, and arrested for that, and subject to proceedings and imprisonment, however brief, for that, That's the nature of the cause of action. I could give a lot more. I could have said that I'm a law-abiding citizen who's never been convicted of a crime, and I see him about out of time. But please, when I come back, I can get to that more. Thank you very much.
Mr. Love.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, Richard Love for Office of McConaughey. Mr. Ruffin, as the court has noted, didn't describe how he was driving or anything concerning the facts leading up to his arrest. Rather, his complaint is based on conclusory allegations and a few facts that the district court properly found were too speculative to plausibly support a Section 1983 claim. The district court dismissed the 1983 claim, but allowed the case to proceed in Superior Court on the common law claims and remanded the matter to that court. I believe that consistent with the Iqbal case, the district court need not and properly did not accept as true Mr. Ruffin's conclusory allegations that Officer McConaughey arrested him without probable cause based on false allegations and his race. Indeed, in his reply, he admits that both the allegation that he was arrested with malice, without probable cause, intentionally on the basis of race, color, and ethnic background, violated the Fourth and Ninth Amendment, were all formulaic recitations of the elements of a federal claim, bare assertions that the court need not credit. Mr. Ruffin basically provides no factual support whatsoever for the conclusions. In fact, if I heard his argument correctly, this was a litigation strategy so as not to provide discovery based on his complaint to Officer McConaughey. The mere possibility of misconduct here by the fact that he claimed that his arrest was based on, or the charges were based on, false allegations without any further factual enhancement or any further factual support whatsoever, really don't raise the allegation beyond the level of a mere possibility, which Iqbal clearly rejected based on a 12B6 motion. And a Fourth Amendment violation, as the district court found, given all the various possibilities that exist under this factual scenario, simply was too speculative to raise this claim to the level required by Iqbal, which is to plausibly support a Fourth Amendment claim. And Mr. Ruffin alluded to some, I believe, local law requirements, and we would submit that those local law requirements are really irrelevant to his federal claim, which is the only claim that was dismissed. His Fourth Amendment claim depends on federal constitutional law, and a warrantless arrest satisfies the Constitution so long as the officer had probable cause to believe that the suspect has committed or is committing an offense. And this rule extends even to minor misdemeanors. Here, reckless driving is an offense punishable initially by up to 3 months imprisonment. That's DC Code Section 50-2201.04. And of course, officers may perform incident searches incident to a constitutionally permissible arrest. The Ninth Amendment claim here really provides even less support. It's questionable whether this serves as a substantive basis for a Section 1983 claim. And even if it did, Mr. Ruffin sets forth no separate factual allegations to demonstrate that Officer McConaughey construed any of his constitutional rights so as to deny or disparage any other right. Officer McConaughey was properly dismissed as to these federal claims, given the bare assertions that were raised in Mr. Ruffin's amended complaint. To conclude otherwise would be to subject officers to suit in federal court and discovery on the basis of a claim that merely is a denial of whatever was charged, perhaps with the addition of a claim that the arrest was based on race, was based on national origin, or some other protected category. Mr. Ruffin's argument that the district court considered matters outside of the pleadings relies really on an irrelevant observation that the district court made in an earlier order, I think it's 6 months earlier, that denied his motion to file a statement of material facts in opposition to the alternative motion for summary judgment.
Is it really irrelevant when you consider two things? One, the sequence of then his the judge's granting of the motion to dismiss, and as I understand it, the inclusion of that, of at least matters outside the pleadings attached to the opposition to the motion to dismiss. I don't know if it was the same thing that Mr. Ruffin submitted, his declaration that was too late, that was submitted on the summary judgment motion.
Yeah, actually, the declaration was submitted as a part of his opposition to the alternative motion for summary judgment. What he failed to include was a statement of material facts that were in dispute. And after
what was attached to his opposition to the motion to dismiss, there were just one pleading?
What was attached to the declaration?
Was his opposition just one opposition?
Yes.
To the motion to dismiss or in the alternative summary judgment?
Yes.
All right. So Judge Walton had not the statement of issues not in dispute, but had his declaration when he was considering, although he didn't grant it, the summary judgment, and when he told Mr. Ruffin, it's too late to file the statement.
Yes.
All right. So then when he grants the motion to dismiss several months later, he says in that footnote, here are the things I've considered. And the memoranda are part of it, and they have those attachments.
That's correct.
And but because in the body of his order, it is so clear that he looks only at the complaint, it's your position, isn't it, that he, even though he didn't expressly say, I have excluded anything apart from the complaint, that that's, in fact, what he did?
Right. That's correct. And to rule otherwise really would be a mechanical and wooden application of Rule 12D. I think it's perfectly clear from his order that he only considered the four corners of the complaint and that he applied the rules that were solely applicable to Rule 12B6. My only point was his reference to considering the declaration if he was going to determine whether or not summary judgment was appropriate is really irrelevant, because when he got down to reviewing the motion, he merely determined that dismissal was appropriate on the basis of Rule B12B6, and in the body of his order says that the motion for summary judgment was moot. So he never proceeded beyond that. At any rate, unless the court has further questions, we would ask that this court affirm the ruling of the district court.
All right. Thank you. Yes, Lieutenant. All right. Why don't you take a minute, Mr. Ruffin?
Well, Judge, what I'd like to say is, first of all, with regard to the schools of thought that govern whether matters need to be excluded explicitly by the district court or not, and the District of Columbia Circuit has never made a statement along the lines of the First Circuit or the Ninth Circuit. And so I think I should be able to rely on Funds for the Animals Incorporated, and also Even Doe that was cited by the appellees. And then second of all, I want to go back to the statement and just make clear. I think it would be troubling if a litigant bringing an action that lays out in count one, count two, and count three, the sort of troubling experience that I went through, has his civil rights action removed from court after it's brought to federal court by Officer McConaughey in the District of Columbia, not because I brought it there, but they bring it to the federal district court, and then it's removed from court because they, in their effort to avoid liability for their wrongdoing, they put themselves in a different posture when they're trying to enforce the law. When I adequately state the nature of my arrest, I shouldn't have to give a statement attached to that that would more or less describe my conduct, say, for 10 minutes or even 3 minutes before my arrest. That, to me, is inappropriate because I never, ever allege wrongdoing against Officer McConaughey or the District of Columbia regards to anything before my arrest. And to say that I should say more about me is to raise material that's not actually germane to the cause of action. And I think that I should be able to rely on Iqbal that says there's a two-pronged analysis here, and I fulfill the factual part. And if it's not sufficient for Officer McConaughey in the District of Columbia, their view should not establish the standard for the court. And I just simply say that Natar versus Bush at 605 Fed Third at 1002 lays out a standard I think applies. Otherwise, Mr. Natar would have lost his action because he didn't identify the two L3 employees who negotiated the oral contract with him. And then similarly, Atherton versus District of Columbia would be broadened insofar as in that case, which is at 567 Fed Third 67, that man simply said, I'm half Mexican, I speak Spanish, and I said, thank you, gracias, to a witness who spoke before the grand jury in Spanish. And then he said on the basis of that, he was the victim of this illegal discrimination when he was removed from the grand jury. I can understand why he was troubled, but I can also understand why the court thought he needed to say more. But he didn't have to give an explanation of his conduct before he joined the grand jury. So I know that you've studied this matter, and I hope that we're mindful that litigants like me, and I know I'm a lawyer, but litigants like me who aren't lawyers, who find that they're troubled by the government, who never broke the law, we get troubled when the government, who enforces their precepts and statutes against the public, are not held to the account by their own statutes and also by the higher constitution. So I just simply ask that that sort of two-pronged analysis and fairness apply in this case. Thank you very much. Thank you.